thinking. Matt thought about the education he'd received. He'd read a mountain of books. He'd listened to conversations between El Patrón and the most powerful people in the world. "You're like, I don't know how to put it, my grandfather. Your manners, I mean, you don't gobble your food or spit on the floor. I've never heard you swear. It's okay, but it's different." Matt felt cold. He'd always copied El Patrón, who was, of course, 100 years behind the times.
"That me cae bien. I think he's cool," said Fidelito.
"Of course he's cool, it's only..." Chacho turned to Matt. "Well, you seem used to better things. The rest of us were born in the dirt, and we know we'll never get out of it."
"We're in this place together," Matt pointed at the hot desert.
"Yeah, welcome to hell's baby brother," Chacho said, scuffing puffs of salt with his feet. Dinner that night was plankton patties and boiled seaweed. Matt didn't mind fasting, but he felt sorry for Fidelito. The little boy was so skinny, it didn't seem like he could survive a missed meal. Chacho solved the problem by staring at a nervous-looking kid until he managed to get half his food. Chacho could come on like a werewolf when he wanted to.
"Eat," he told Fidelito. "I don't want food if you can't have any," the little boy protested. "Test it for me. I want to know if it's poison."
So Fidelito choked the patty down.
As in the first camp, a keeper arrived to give them an inspirational bedtime story. This one's name was Jorge. They all melted together in Matt's mind. Raúl, Carlos, and Jorge. They all wore black uniforms with beehives on the sleeves. And they were all idiots. Jorge's story was called Why Minds Gather Dust Like Old Rooms.
"If we work all day in the hot sun," said Jorge, "what happens to our bodies?"
He waited expectantly, just like Raúl had.
"We get dirty," a boy said.
"That's right," the keeper said, beaming. "Our faces get dirty, our hands get dirty, our whole bodies get dirty. Then what do we do?"
"Take a bath," the boy said. He seemed used to the drill.
"Yes, we clean off that old muck, and then we feel good again. It's good to be clean."
"It's good to be clean,"
said all the boys, except for Matt, Chacho, and Fidelito. They'd been taken by surprise.
"Let's back up, so our new brothers can learn with the rest of us," said Jorge. "It's good to be clean."
"It's good to be clean," said everyone, including Matt, Chacho, and Fidelito.
"Our minds and our work may also collect dust and need washing," the keeper went on. "For example, a door that's always being opened and closed doesn't stick because the hinges never get rusty. Work is the same way. If you don't loaf," and Jorge looked straight at Matt, Chacho, and Fidelito, "you form good habits. Your work never gets rusty."
"Wait a minute," thought Matt. Celia's kitchen door was in constant use, but it swelled up on damp days, and then you had to force it open with your shoulder. Tam Lin got so irritated by it, he put his fist right through the wood. Then it had to be replaced, and the door worked a lot better afterward. Matt thought these things, but he didn't say them. He didn't want to miss another meal.
"So, if we work steadily and don't loaf," said Jorge, "our work doesn't have time to get dirty. But our minds can fill up with dust and germs, too. Can anyone tell me how to keep our minds clean?"
Chacho snickered, and Matt poked him with his elbow. The last thing they needed now was a wisecrack. Several boys raised their hands, but the keeper ignored them.
"I think one of our new brothers can answer that question. What about you, Matt?"
Instantly, everyone's eyes turned to Matt. He felt like he'd been caught in the crossbeams of El Patrón's security lights.
Me, he stammered. "I just got here."
"But you have so many ideas," Jorge purred. "Surely you wouldn't mind sharing them with us."
Matt's thoughts raced through the arguments the keeper had already presented.
"Isn't keeping your mind clean like keeping the rust off door hinges? If you use your brain all the time, it won't have time to collect germs."
Matt thought it was a brilliant answer, considering the question had been thrown at him out of the blue. But it was the wrong answer. He saw the other boys tense, and Jorge's mouth quiver on the edge of a smile. He'd been set up.
Diseased opinions not suited to the good of the people have to be cleaned out with self-criticism, Jorge said triumphantly. Would anyone like to show Matt how this is done?
Me, me,
shouted several boys, waving their arms in the air. The keeper picked one with really spectacular acne covering his neck and ears. All of the boys had bad skin, but this one took the prize. He even had zits nestling in his hair.
Okay, Tonton, you go first, said Jorge.
Tonton had a face that looked like it had been slammed into a wall. You could see right up his nostrils, and maybe, Matt thought, get a peek at his brain.
I thought about stealing food this morning, said Tonton eagerly. The cook left it unguarded for a minute, and I wanted to take pancake, but I didn't.
So, you harbored thoughts contradictory to the general good of the people, said Jorge.
Yes.
What punishment should a person have who harbors contradictory thoughts?
What language were they talking, wondered Matt. Each word seemed clear enough, but the meaning of the whole slipped away.
I ought to have to recite the 5 principles of good citizenship and the 4 attitudes leading to right mindfulness twice before getting food next time, said Tonton.
Very good, cried Jorge.
The keeper selected several more hands after that, and each boy confessed to weird things, like not folding his blanket correctly or using too much soap. The punishments all had to do with chanting the 5 principles of good citizenship and the 4 attitudes leading to right mindfulness, except for the case of one boy who admitted to taking a 3-hour siesta. Jorge frowned.
That's serious. No breakfast for you, he said.
The boy looked crestfallen. No more hands shot up. The keeper turned to Matt.
Now that our new brother has been educated as to the meaning of self-criticism, perhaps he'd like to share his personal shortcomings.
He waited. Tonton and the other boys leaned forward.
Well, said Jorge after a moment.
I haven't done anything wrong, said Matt. A gasp of horror went around the room.
Nothing wrong, said the keeper, his voice rising. Nothing wrong? What about wanting to put computer chips into the heads of innocent horses? What about fouling the bag of plastic strips used for making sandals? What about inciting your brothers to loaf when you were supposed to be cleaning the shrimp tanks?
I fouled the plastic strips, squeaked Fidelito.
He looked scared out of his wits, and Matt quickly said, It's not his fault. I gave him the bag.
Now we are getting somewhere, Jorge said.
But I puked,
insisted the little boy.
It's not your fault, brother, the keeper said. You were led astray by this aristocrat. Be quiet, he said with a hint of anger when Fidelito looked ready to take the blame again. The rest of you must help this aristocrat see the error of his ways. We do this because we love him and want to welcome him into the hive.
Then they all attacked him. Every single boy in the room, except Chacho and Fidelito, hurled an accusation at Matt. He talked like an aristocrat. He folded his blanket in a swanky way. He cleaned under his fingernails. He used words people couldn't understand. Everything Chacho had mentioned, and more, was thrown at Matt like balls of sticky mud. It wasn't the unfairness of the accusations that so hurt him, as much as the venom that lay behind them. Matt thought he'd been accepted. He thought he'd at last come to an oasis. Ugly and uncomfortable, but still an oasis, where he could feel welcome. But it was all a sham. They knew what he was. They might not understand how appallingly different he was, but they knew he didn't belong. They would keep hurling mud at him until he suffocated under its weight. He heard the boys go away. He heard Chacho swear as he was forced to climb into a bunk bed. Matt was left alone, curled up in the middle of the floor like the unnatural creature he was. And yet, inside, from a place Matt didn't know existed. A host of voices rose.
"Here's the dirty little secret," Tamlin whispered in his ear. "No one can tell the difference between a clone and a human. That's because there isn't any difference. The idea of clones being inferior is a filthy lie."
Then Celia's arms were around him, and Matt could smell the cilantro leaves she chopped up when she was cooking.
"I love you, mijo," she said, hugging him. "Never forget that."
Next, El Patrón put his gnarled, old hand on Matt's head and said,
"Now I scrambled for the coins the mayor threw me. How I rolled in the dirt like a pig. But I needed the money. I was so poor. I didn't have 2 pesos to rub together. You're just like I was at that age."
Matt shivered. El Patrón hadn't loved him, but the emotion the old man had given him was just as strong. The will to live. To put out branches until he overshadowed the whole forest. Matt turned away from El Patrón and saw, in his mind, Maria.
"Gosh, I've missed you," said Maria, giving him a kiss.
"I love you," Matt said.
"I love you too," Maria replied. "I know that's a sin, and I'll probably go to hell for it."
"If I have a soul, I'll go with you," promised Matt. Matt rose from the floor and saw that the room had been darkened. Chacho and Fidelito were watching him from the top bunks near the ceiling. Someone was going to be sincerely sorry he put Fidelito on a top bunk. Chacho pointed at the door and made an extremely rude hand gesture. Fidelito lifted his nightshirt and mooned the missing Jorge. Matt had to swallow hard to keep the tears from rolling down his face. He wasn't alone after all. With friends like these, he would triumph, as El Patrón had triumphed over poverty and death so long ago. Chapter 30. When the Whales Lost Their Legs. One thing was certainly true. Something did paralyze your sense of smell in this place, because Matt no longer noticed the foul air. The food tasted better, too. Not good, but not totally disgusting, either. Day after day, he, Chacho, and Fidelito walked the long row of shrimp tanks and cleaned out bugs. Every evening, they trudged back to a meal of plankton burgers, or plankton pasta, or plankton burritos. Carlos never seemed to run out of ideas for things to do with plankton. When the growing cycle was over, Tantan came out with a huge, slow-moving harvester. It groaned along like an arthritic dinosaur and dumped the contents of the tanks into its cavernous belly. Matt filled them again from a pipe running out of the Gulf of California. At the far western end of the shrimp farm, the boys could look through the fence at the channel that had once been as wide as the sea. It was a deep blue, with hordes of seagulls. Chacho balanced on the rim of a tank to get a better view. The lower part of the fence was safe to touch, although the top wire buzzed and popped with electricity. Fidelito stretched his arms through the mesh, as though he could touch the enticing blue if only he tried a little harder. Matt searched for weak places in the mesh. Escape was never far from his mind.
"What's that?" asked Chacho, pointing north.
Matt shaded his eyes. He saw something white peeping over a fold in the ground.
"Doesn't look like trees," said Chacho. "Want to take a look?"
The sun was beginning to lower in the west, but the lure of something new was too great to resist. "This is going to take a while. You wait here," Matt told Fidelito. He knew the little boy didn't have the strength for an extra walk.
"You can't leave me where compadres," said Fidelito.
"We need you to guard our stuff," said Chacho. "If anyone tries to steal it, kick them where I showed you."
Fidelito grinned and saluted like a midget commando. Matt and Chacho walked over a landscape even more desolate than the area near the salt works. There, if it rained, a few stunted weeds struggled to the surface. Here, there was nothing except white patches of salt. Seashells dotted the surface, evidence of the living sea that had once stretched from horizon to horizon.
"Maybe it's only a salt bed," said Chacho.
As they got closer, Matt saw odd shapes thrusting up. Some were paddle-like, others were thin and curved. It was the strangest thing he'd ever seen. They came up a slight rise and looked out over a deep chasm It was filled from side to side with bones. For a few moments, Chacho and Matt stood on the edge of the chasm and said nothing. Finally, Chacho murmured,
"Somebody lost a heck of a lot of cattle down there."
"Those aren't cattle," Matt said. The skulls were huge, the jaws shaped like monster bird beaks. One rib alone was longer than a cow. Mixed in with them were the paddle-like bones, massive enough to make tables or even beds. So many skeletons were jumbled together, Matt couldn't begin to count them. He guessed there were hundreds. Thousands.
"Isn't that a human skull?" said Chacho.
Matt squinted at the shadows partway down and saw what Chacho was pointing at.
"Think about it," the big boy said. "Someone fell in there, he'd never get out."
Matt thought about it. He'd been about to explore the pit, stepping from bone to bone like climbing down a large tree. Now he saw that the whole pit was delicately balanced. Put one foot in the wrong place, and the whole structure would collapse. He clenched his teeth, sickened by what he'd almost done.
"We better go back," said Chacho. "We don't want Fidelito poking around here."
Fidelito had been entertaining himself by splashing his feet in a shrimp tank. He draped a net over his head for a sunshade.
"What was it?"
he called to Matt and Chacho. Matt described the bones, and to his surprise, the little boy recognized them.
"They're whales," said Fidelito. "Eight of them beached themselves where I lived, in Yucatan. They swam right up on shore and then couldn't get back. Mi abuelita said that was because they used to walk on land and had forgotten they didn't have legs anymore. Phew! Yuck! They smelled like Jorge's sneakers. The villagers had to bury them in the sand."
Fidelito chirped and warbled about rotting whales all the way back to the factory. Anything to do with his grandmother got him going. What could have lured all those whales to their death? Thought Matt as they trudged along the line of shrimp tanks. Maybe the chasm was still full of water when the Gulf of California dried up. Maybe the whales decided to wait there until the rains came and the gulf filled up again. Only it didn't fill up, and the whales had lost their legs, so they couldn't walk home anymore. Every night Jorge told a bedtime story and afterward invited the boys to confess sins. And every night, the boys, led by Tonton, hurled accusations at Matt. It was meant to humiliate him, but the odd thing was that the attacks hurt less the longer they went on. Matt thought it was like listening to a barnyard full of turkeys. El Patron sometimes ordered dozens of the ridiculous birds when he was planning a party, and Matt liked to lean over the fence to watch them. Tam Lin said turkeys were the stupidest birds in the world. If they were looking up when it was raining, they'd drown. At any rate, turkeys went into a wild-eyed, head-banging panic when a red-tailed hawk went over.
"Gobble, gobble, gobble!"
they shrieked, even though they weighed five times as much as a hawk and could have stomped it into the ground. That was what Matt heard when the boys trotted out his crimes.
"Gobble, gobble, gobble!"
Jorge's eyes narrowed and his mouth tightened into a thin line when Matt refused to confess, but he said nothing. Chacho and Fidelito quickly learned that the easiest way to avoid trouble was to give the keeper what he wanted. They confessed to all sorts of creative sins, and Jorge was so pleased that he hardly ever punished them. Matt was especially tired this night after the walk to the whale pit. He mumbled his way through the five principles of good citizenship and the four attitudes leading to right mindfulness. He barely heard Jorge's story. It was something about how you needed all 10 fingers to play a piano, the fingers had to support one another and not try to show off by being individualists. Fidelito admitted to gagging over plankton milkshakes, and Chacho said he used bad words when the wake-up bell went off. The keeper smiled and turned to Matt. But Matt remained silent. He knew he was being stupid. All he had to do was confess to something small, but he couldn't force himself to grovel in front of Jorge.
"I see our aristocrat needs further education," said the keeper.
His gaze passed over the assembled boys, and all at once, the atmosphere changed in the room. Everyone stared down at the floor, and no one put up his hand. Matt roused himself out of his stupor long enough to notice.
"You!"
barked Jorge so suddenly that several boys flinched. He pointed at Tonton.
"Me?"
squeaked Tonton, as though he couldn't believe it.
"You stole a holo game from the keeper's rooms," We found it under a pile of rags in the kitchen. Cleaning the keeper's rooms is a privilege, yelled Jorge. It is earned through obedience and good behavior, but you failed in your duties. What should be done with a boy who sneaks around and takes things the others don't have?
The keepers have things the others don't have, thought Matt. He didn't say it aloud.
He should work extra hard, a boy guessed.
No, shouted Jorge.
Maybe he can apologize, someone else faltered.
Haven't you learned anything? The keeper bellowed. Worker bees must think of the whole hive. If they gather nectar for themselves and don't bring any home, the hive will starve when the cold weather comes. That's not what workers do. It's how drones behave. They steal from others. But when winter comes, what happens to the drones?
The good bees kill them,
said a boy, almost as small as Fidelito. Wait a minute, thought Matt.
That's right. The good bees sting the evil drones to death. But we don't want to go quite that far, said Jorge.
Matt let out the breath he'd been holding. In opium, murder was a casual thing. He didn't know what the rules were here. By now, Tonton was reduced to absolute terror. Tears and snot ran down the boy's unlovely face. Matt was surprised to feel sorry for him. Tonton was a slimy suck-up who deserved whatever was coming.
Assume the position, said Jorge.
Tonton stumbled to a wall. He leaned against it with his arms stretched out before him and his hands flat against the wall. He spread his legs.
Remember, if you move, it will be worse for you. Tonton nodded.
The keeper unlocked a small storage closet and selected a cane. Matt could see they were of all sizes. Jorge took his time making the decision. Tonton whimpered softly. Finally, the keeper brought out a cane about the thickness of his thumb. He thwacked it against a bed to test its strength. Otherwise, the room was perfectly silent, except for Tonton's snuffles. Jorge paced back and forth. He seemed to be deciding what part of Tonton to hit. The boy's arms and legs were trembling so hard, it seemed like he'd fall over before Jorge laid a hand on him. Matt could hardly believe what was happening. It was so cruel, so pointless. Tonton had shown himself eager to obey. He humbled himself whenever the keepers asked. But maybe that was the point. El Patron said easy targets were opportunities to frighten enemies you weren't ready to tackle just yet. That's me, thought Matt. I'm the enemy Jorge wants to frighten. The keeper suddenly broke off his pacing and hurled himself across the room. At the very last instant, Tonton panicked and ran. Jorge was on him at once, flailing away, hitting anything he could reach. He struck again and again until blood flew off the cane. Fidelito scrambled over to bury his face in Matt's chest. Finally, the keeper stepped back, panting, and pointed at the boys cowering near the door.
"Take him to the infirmary," he ordered.
The boys scurried to obey. They dragged Tonton limp as a rag from the room. Jorge propped the cane against a bed and wiped his face with a towel. No one moved or spoke. Everyone looked too terrified to even breathe. After a moment, Jorge looked up with the kindly expression of a beloved teacher. The fury had drained from his face as completely as it had once drained from Tom's face, and the change was even more frightening than rage.
"I think our young aristocrat has understood the lesson," he said gently. "Well, Matt, do you have any personal shortcomings you'd like to share?"
"No," said Matt, pushing Fidelito out of harm's way. Everyone gasped.
"I beg your pardon?"
"I haven't done anything wrong." Matt understood the lesson all right. It was this: even slavish obedience didn't protect you from punishment.
"I see," sighed the keeper. "Then there's no help for it. Assume the position."
"I don't see how it makes any difference," Matt said. "You beat up Tonton when he was lying on the floor."
"Do it. It makes things easier,"
someone dared to whisper. Jorge whirled around, but didn't catch who spoke.
Matt stood with his arms crossed. Inside he was quaking with fear, but outside he gave the keeper as cold and imperious a look as El Padrón had ever mustered to terrify an underling.
"Some boys," Jorge said in a thin, almost wheedling voice that sent chills down Matt's back, "some boys have to learn the hard way. They have to be broken and mended and broken again until they learn to do what they are told. It may be simple, like sweeping a floor, but they do it eagerly to keep from being broken again. And they do it forever, for as long as they live."
"In other words, you want to turn me into a zombie," said Matt.
"No!"
several voices cried out.
"How dare you accuse me of that?"
Jorge reached for the cane.
"I'll confess for him, I'll do it,"
shrieked Fidelito, running to the center of the room.
"He dropped the soap in the shower and didn't pick it up again. He threw away porridge because there was a stink bug in it."
"Fidelito, you idiot,"
groaned Chacho.
"He did those things, honest,"
cried the little boy. Jorge looked from Fidelito to Matt with an interested look in his eyes.
"Go sit down,"
Matt said in a low voice.
"Stop," shouted the keeper. "I see we have social contamination of the worst order here. The aristocrat has turned this boy into his lackey, and thus it is the lackey who should be punished."
"A beating would kill him," said Matt.
"No one is too little to learn the value of education," Jorge said. "Why, even child kings used to be thrashed until they learned not to cry at public meetings, as young as 6 months of age."
"He's got me," thought Matt. No matter how much he wanted to resist Jorge's authority, he couldn't do it at the little boy's expense.
"Very well, I confess," said Matt. "I dropped the soap in the shower and didn't pick it up again. I threw away the porridge because there was a stink bug in it."
"And?" the keeper said pleasantly.
"I peed in a shrimp tank. Don't ask me which one. I don't remember. And I left water running in the kitchen sink."
"Assume the position."
Matt did so, hating himself, but hating the keeper even more. He kept a stony silence as Jorge pranced around trying to work on Matt's nerves. And he didn't scream, although he wanted to very much when the man hurled himself across the room and struck him with a force that made him almost pass out with pain. He straightened up and endured another blow, and another. After 6 blows, Jorge decided he'd done enough. Or more likely, the keeper had exhausted his strength beating up Tantan. Matt figured he'd been lucky, but he didn't doubt that more agony was down the road. Jorge wasn't going to give up that easily. Matt staggered to a bunk and collapsed. He was barely aware of Jorge's departure, but the instant the door closed, the boys scrambled off their beds and clustered around Matt.
"You were great,"
they cried.
"Jorge's such a loser," said a tall, skinny boy named Flaco.
"Loser?" said Matt weakly. "I'm the one who gave up."
"Chale, no way,"
said Flaco.
"Jorge crossed the line tonight. If news of this gets back to the keeper's headquarters, he's history."
"No one's going to tell them," Chacho said scornfully. "This place might as well be on the moon."
"Soon, I'll be old enough to leave," said Flaco. "I'll go to headquarters then and tell them."
"I'm not holding my breath waiting," Chacho said.
"Anyhow, you were muy bravo to take the beating for Fidelito,"
Flaco told Matt.
"We thought you were a wussy aristocrat, but you're really one of us."
"I kept telling you that,"
Fidelito piped up. Then everyone started arguing about when they discovered Matt wasn't a wussy aristocrat, and when they knew he was muy gente, a great guy. Matt let the warm tide of their approval flow around him. He was dizzy with pain, but it was worth it if the others liked him.
"Hey, we gotta get him fixed up,"
Flaco said. The boys checked the hallway to be sure it was clear. Then they carried Matt to the infirmary, where Tantan was already sound asleep. A pockmarked boy in a green uniform dressed Matt's wounds and measured 3 drops of liquid into a spoon.
"That's laudanum," Matt realized as his eyes caught the label on the bottle.
He fought against taking the medicine. He didn't want to turn into a zombie like Felicia or die like poor Furball, but he was too exhausted to resist for long. If he died, Matt wondered as he drifted off into a drug-induced haze, Would he meet Furball in whatever afterlife non-humans inhabited? And would the dog sink his teeth into Matt's ankle for taking him away from Maria?
Chapter 31 Tantan.
I feel awful,
groaned Tantan, reaching blindly for the glass of water by his bed.
You look awful,
observed the pockmarked boy.
You take that back, Luna. I can still beat the stuffing out of you.
Not now that I'm a keeper, Luna said smugly.
You're only a trainee.
Tantan managed to reach the water, but he spilled half of it on his chest when he tried to drink. Wait a minute, Matt said. He was unwilling to reach for his own glass, even though he was extremely thirsty. He suspected that serious pain was waiting for him if he moved. You're training to be a keeper?
Well, duh, said Luna.
Everyone does, eventually. Matt watched the light dancing on the glass of water just out of his reach. But there's only 20 keepers here, and how many boys?
210, at the moment, said Luna.
They can't all become keepers. There aren't enough places, Matt said. Tantan and Luna looked at each other.
Carlos says every boy who keeps the 5 principles of good citizenship and, the 4 attitudes leading to right mindfulness until he reaches 18 becomes a keeper, said Tantan.
No matter how carefully Matt explained to them the difference between 210 job seekers and only 20 jobs, it didn't penetrate.
You're just jealous, Tantan said.
But in one area Tantan was knowledgeable. He knew what went on inside the keeper's compound, which was surrounded by a high wall. The keepers had holo games, and a television, and a swimming pool. They had all-night parties with delicious food. And Tantan knew all this, Matt now discovered, because he cleaned the keeper's rooms and washed their dishes. Matt figured they allowed Tantan inside because they thought he was too slow-witted to understand what he saw. But as Celia often said, some people may think slowly, but they're very thorough about it. As Matt listened to Tantan, he realized the boy wasn't stupid. His observations of the keeper's activities and his understanding of the factory's machinery showed an intelligent mind. Tantan was simply careful about his opinions. Matt could see the boy was deeply disturbed about the punishment he'd received the night before. He kept going back to it, picking at it like a scab.
I don't get it, Tantan said, shaking his head. I didn't do anything wrong.
You must have done something. He sure whacked the heck out of you, said Luna.
No, I didn't.
Matt could see the gears churning slowly in the boy's brain. Whatever Jorge said was good. Tantan did what Jorge said. Therefore, Tantan was good. So why did Tantan get the heck whacked out of him?
Jorge es un loco de remate. A complete weirdo, said Luna.
No, Tantan insisted. He's something else.
Matt couldn't guess what conclusion the boy was working toward. What's it like inside the compound?
Tantan's eyes lit up.
You can't believe it. They've got roast beef and pork chops and pie a la mode.
What's pie a la mode? Luna asked.
It's got ice cream on it, not melted or anything.
I had ice cream once, Luna said in a dreamy voice. My mother gave it to me.
The keepers drink real milk, too, not ground-up plankton. And they eat chocolates wrapped in gold paper.
Tantan had stolen a chocolate once. The memory hovered in his mind the way the Virgin of Guadalupe had hovered over Matt's bed when he was little. Doesn't it bother you that the keepers have these things and we don't? Said Matt. Both Tantan and Luna drew themselves up like offended rattlesnakes.
They earned it, Luna said. They put in their time, and when we put in our time, we'll have those things too.
Yeah,
said Tantan. But something seemed to be working at the back of his mind.
Okay, I was just curious, Matt said.
He braced himself
and reached for the glass of water. The pain was worse than he expected. He gasped and fell back. Pretty bad, huh? Luna folded Matt's fingers around the glass. Want some laudanum?
No.
Matt had spent years watching Felicia turn into a zombie. He didn't want to follow her example.
Your choice. Personally, I love the stuff.
Why do you need it? Are you in pain? Asked Matt. Luna sniggered as though Matt had said something completely stupid.
It's a trip, see? It's a ticket out of this place.
You're only a trainee, Tantan said scornfully. You're not supposed to, trip out until you move into the compound.
Says who?
Luna picked up the laudanum bottle and sloshed it around.
How are they going to count all the drops in here?
It's my reward for running the infirmary.
Wait a minute, said Matt. You mean the keepers take this stuff?
Sure,
Tantan said.
They earned it.
Matt's mind was working very fast. How many of them? How often?
All of them, and, every night.
Matt felt lightheaded. This meant that every single night the keepers turned into zombies. This meant the factory was left unguarded. The power plant that electrified the fence was left unguarded. A big sign flashing freedom lit up in Matt's mind. Do either of you know where San Luis is? He asked. It turned out both boys did. Tantan had grown up there. He described in his halting way a city of whitewashed houses and tile roofs, of vines spilling over walls, of busy marketplaces and beautiful gardens. It sounded so pleasant. Matt wondered why Tantan didn't want to return. Why was he looking forward to life inside a compound with a bottle of laudanum for company? It was totally insane.
San Luis sure sounds great, Matt said.
Yes,
said Tantan, as though the thought had just occurred to him. Matt was bursting to tell him to dump the 5 principles of good citizenship and the 4 attitudes leading to right mindfulness and head over the fence to San Luis. But that would have been foolish. Tantan worked toward a conclusion with the same slow deliberation as the shrimp harvester he drove along the tanks. Nothing could hurry him, and nothing, Matt hoped, would turn him aside either. When Matt hobbled to the bathroom and looked into the mirror, he got a shock. All the boys had zits. Matt knew he had them too. But this was the first time he'd had a good look at the damage. There was no mirror in the dormitory. He looked like a loaded pizza. He scrubbed and scrubbed with the gray seaweed soap, but it only made his skin turn a violent red. Tantan and Luna guffawed when Matt returned.
They don't wash off, you know, said Luna.
I look like a plankton burger, mourned Matt.
Huh, you, look like a plankton burger that's been, barfed up by a seagull and, left out in the sun,
said Tantan in an unusual flight of poetry. I get the picture. Matt painfully crawled into bed. He lay on his side to spare the welts on his back.
We all have zits, said Luna. It's the mark of people who work with plankton.
Great, thought Matt. Now that he thought about it, he realized the keepers were only mildly scarred, but not covered in the same active little pus volcanoes that dotted the boys' faces. Maybe it had something to do with their food. A diet of pork chops, pile of mode, and chocolate was obviously better for your skin than healthy, nutritious plankton. Jorge forced Matt and Tantan back to work the next day. Tantan really needed another day in the infirmary, but he obeyed without a murmur. Matt was eager to get back. He couldn't wait to get going on an escape plan. Before, it had seemed pointless. Now he knew San Luis lay a few miles to the north, beyond a low range of hills. As Tam Lin once said, a jailer has 100 things on his mind, but a prisoner has only one. Escape. All that concentrated attention was like a laser cannon melting through a steel wall. Given his background, Matt figured Tam Lin knew a lot about escaping from jails. All Matt had to do was shut down the electricity to the fence and climb over. It sounded simple, but it wasn't. The powerhouse was locked after dark. The keepers counted the boys every night at 10 o'clock and every morning at 5. That left 7 hours in which to walk the 5 miles to the fence, while hoping the power hadn't been turned on again, and then 20 more miles to San Luis in the dark. If the ground was covered with cacti, the trip might take a lot longer. What would the keepers do when they discovered 3 boys missing? Because Matt intended to take Chacho and Fidelito with him. Could Jorge use a hovercraft to hunt them down? Fidelito should probably be left behind. He couldn't walk 25 miles. And yet, how could Matt abandon him? Friendship was a pain, Matt thought. All these years he'd wanted friends, and now he discovered they came with strings attached. Very well. He'd take Fidelito, but he'd need more time. If he overloaded the boiler next to the keeper's compound, it would explode, and... was it wrong to blow 20 men to smithereens? El Patron wouldn't have worried 1 second over it. Tamlin had tried to blow up the English Prime Minister, but he'd killed 20 children instead.
Murder is wrong, Brother Wolf, said a voice in Matt's mind.
He sighed. This was probably what Maria called having a conscience. It was even more of a pain than friendship.
Why do we have to wait for him?
Asked Chacho as they watched the shrimp harvester chug and wheeze its slow way toward their tank.
Because he knows things we need to find out, Matt explained patiently.
They were sitting by the farthest tank. The fence loomed up behind them, its top wire humming and crackling in the dry air.
He's a suck-up. He dumps on us every night.
Not since the beating, Matt pointed out.
Well, that's because he's taken a vacation.
Chacho was unwilling to believe Tantan had any good qualities.
Be nice to him, okay?
Mi abuelita says people's souls are like gardens, Fidelito said brightly. She says you can't turn your back on someone because his garden's full of weeds. You have to give him water and lots of sunlight.
Oh, brother, said Chacho.
But he didn't argue with the little boy. A plume of dust rose from the back of Tantan's harvester. It settled slowly across the barren ground. The air was so still, the plume barely drifted away from the road.
You should be working,
Tantan called as his machine jerked to a halt.
And you should be head down in a shrimp tank, muttered Chacho. Matt kicked him.
If you're, waiting to beat me up, don't bother, said Tantan. I can, beat the stuffing out of you.
Why would you assume that 3 people innocently sitting by the road are planning to attack you? Said Chacho. Although it could be true.
We only want to be friendly, Matt said, frowning at Chacho.
Why?
Tantan's eyes narrowed with suspicion.
Because mi abuelita says people have to be tended like gardens, Fidelito chirped. They need sunlight and water, and their souls need to...
be weeded, finished Chacho.
Tantan's eyes rounded as he processed this curious statement. We just want to make friends, okay? Matt said. Tantan took another minute to consider that, and then he stepped off the harvester. When was the last time you went to San Luis? Asked Matt. If Tantan was surprised by the question, he didn't show it.
About a year ago, I went with Jorge.
Do you have family there?
My mother went across the, border years ago. My father tried to find her. He didn't come back.
Matt noticed that Tantan's speech problem got worse when he talked about his parents.
No abuelita?
Fidelito asked.
I did. Maybe she's still there.
Tantan's mouth turned down at the sides.
Why don't you go look for her? Said Chacho. Hombre, if I had a grandma only 20 miles to the north, I'd rip up this fence to find her. What's wrong with you, man?
Chacho, no, said Matt, putting his hand on the boy's shoulder.
You don't understand, Tantan said. Jorge saw me on the wrong side of the border. There were farm patrols and, dogs, big mud-colored dogs with big teeth. They did everything the farm patrol said, and, the farm patrol told them to eat me.
Tantan shuddered at the memory.
Jorge came over the border
and shot them. He got into a lot of trouble for it, too. He saved my life, and I owe him everything.
Did Jorge tell you not to look for your grandmother? Matt said.
He said I was born to be a keeper. He said that keepers don't have families, only one another, but that it's, better, because families only run off and abandon you.
But your abuelita must have cried when you didn't come home, Fidelito said.
I wouldn't have come home, you dork, shouted Tonton. I would have been inside a dog's belly.
It's okay, Fidelito, Matt told the little boy. That's enough weed pulling for one day. He asked Tonton about San Luis, and Tonton was eager to talk about that. The longer he spoke, the less he stumbled over his words. The scowl on his face smoothed out. He looked a lot younger and happier. Tonton described the city so thoroughly, he seemed to have a map spread out in his mind. He recalled every detail, an oleander bush with peach-colored flowers, an adobe wall with palo verde trees draped over it, a fountain tinkling into a copper basin. It was like following a camera down a street. And gradually, he lowered his guard enough to talk about his mama and papa. He had lived in a crowded house with aunts and uncles and brothers and cousins and a tiny abuelita who ruled the whole establishment. But it hadn't been an unhappy place, even though they'd been poor. At last, Tonton stretched and smiled as though he'd had a fine meal.
I won't tell anyone why we're late, he said. I'll say the harvester broke down.
He let Fidelito ride most of the way back with him, putting the little boy down only when they came within sight of the keeper's compound.
I don't get it,
whispered Chacho, as the harvester shuddered its way back. He and Matt walked to one side, away from the plume of dust.
It's like you turned a light on inside his head. I didn't know Tonton was that bright.
Matt smiled, pleased to be proven right about the big boy. Celia used to say, slow people are just paying close attention.
Who's Celia?
Matt almost dropped in his tracks. He'd carefully hidden any reference to his life before he'd arrived in Aztlan. Listening to Tonton's memories had made him careless.
Why, Celia, she's my mother.
And he knew that it was true. All those years she told him not to think of her as his mother fell away. No one else cared for him the way she did. No one protected him or loved him so much, except perhaps Tam Lin. And Tam Lin was like his father. Suddenly, all the memories, so carefully suppressed in his new life, came flooding back. Matt had trained himself to stop thinking about Celia and Tam Lin. It was too painful. Now he found himself helpless. He crouched on the ground, tears pouring down his face. He held himself tight to keep from crying out loud and totally ruining his image in front of Chacho. But Chacho understood.
I should have kept my fat mouth closed, he said, kneeling in the dust next to Matt. It's the one thing none of us are supposed to bring up until someone's ready. Heck, I bawled my eyes out the first few weeks.
Are you sick?
Called Fidelito's voice from a distance as he rode on the harvester.
He sure is, said Chacho. You would be too if you ate a handful of raw shrimp.
And he shielded Matt from view until he was able to gain control of himself and go on. Chapter 32 Found Out. That night, Jorge, with his instinct for weakness, pounced on Matt again. He insisted that more and more crimes be confessed, and Matt soon found himself repeating the same sins. He hardly cared what he said. Matt felt bruised inside. In a strange way, he wasn't even in the same room with Jorge, because his mind was back in El Patrón's mansion. He was in Celia's apartment. At any moment, she'd call him to dinner, and they'd sit down with Tam Lin. The illusion was painful, but it was so much better than anything in Matt's current life.
If the aristocrat won't listen, came Jorge's smooth voice, I'll have to talk to his lackey.
Matt woke from his reverie to see Fidelito being pulled to the center of the room. The little boy's face was pale with fear.
"You've been bad, haven't you?" purred Jorge.
"Not very bad,"
said Fidelito, glancing at the cane closet.
"That's for me to say, isn't it?" the keeper said.
"Okay,"
said Fidelito. Matt knew the scene before him was important. He tried to keep his mind on it, but he kept slipping back to Celia's apartment.
"I think the aristocrat needs to understand why his behavior must be controlled," Jorge said. "Worker bees know that everything they do affects the whole hive. If a lazy worker sleeps all day and isn't punished, he teaches others to follow his example. If enough workers follow his example, the hive will die."
Fidelito's face showed the argument had gone over his head.
"So we have to correct the weak little lackeys who think it's fun to follow a bad example. Isn't that so?"
I don't know.
Matt forced himself to concentrate on the present. "If you want to punish me, why don't you just do it?" he said.
"Because that doesn't work," Jorge replied.
His face glowed with joy, as though he'd discovered a wonderful truth he couldn't wait to share with everyone. Once more, Matt was reminded of Tom. "I confess, I obey, I take my punishment," Matt said.
"Yes, but you don't mean it," said the keeper. "You go through the motions, but in your heart you're still an aristocrat." "I puzzled over it a long time. Then I realized the thing that makes an aristocrat is the presence of a lackey. If I remove the lackey, poof!"
He snapped his fingers.
"No more aristocrat. Assume the position, Fidelito."
Matt was frozen with shock. This time it was clear his confessions weren't going to save the little boy. He glanced at the others. They looked stunned. The last time Jorge had threatened Fidelito, Matt had come to his rescue. But this time was different. It seemed the keeper had crossed an invisible line, and the boys were appalled by what they were about to witness. It had been okay to beat Tonton for no reason. He was big and able to take it. Fidelito was skinny and frail, in spite of his tough spirit. And he was only 8 years old. Fidelito did what he'd seen the others do, lean his hands against the wall and spread his legs. The other boys murmured. Matt couldn't hear what they were saying. Jorge went to the closet. Matt felt as though he were floating over the scene. Like other times in his life when things had gone wrong, he wanted to retreat into his own private kingdom. If he imagined being in Celia's apartment hard enough, it might actually happen. Jorge paced back and forth, whisking the cane. Any second now, he'd break into a run. He stopped. He gathered his strength for the initial blow. He lunged forward. Matt hurled himself at the keeper. He drove his head into Jorge's stomach and tore the cane from the man's hands. Jorge reeled back, gasping for breath. Matt brought the cane down hard on his shoulder, and then used it to force the keeper to the floor. Chacho came out of nowhere and threw himself into the battle, pummeling Jorge with his fists. "You hit little kids," Chacho shouted between blows. "You deserve to be hit back." The other boys were shouting and cheering. They surged forward, forming a ring around the keeper and his two attackers. Flaco dragged Fidelito away from the fight. Matt's head spun. Jorge was curled into a ball. Maybe he was seriously hurt. The boys were dancing around excitedly, and Matt guessed they were about to join in.
"Stop!" Matt cried, dropping the cane.
He grabbed Chacho and pulled him back.
"We mustn't kill him."
"Why not?"
demanded the boy, but the interruption was enough to bring him to his senses. He sat down hard on the floor and clenched his fists. The other boys groaned with disappointment, but they moved aside when Jorge rolled onto his hands and knees and scuttled to the door. No one said a word. Chacho sat on the floor, breathing heavily. Fidelito whimpered in a corner, where he was being held firmly in place by Flaco. Matt shivered as though he had a high fever. He couldn't imagine what was going to happen next.
but he didn't have long to wait. Footsteps thundered down the hall, and the door was slammed open by an army of keepers. All 20 of them stormed into the room. They were armed with stun guns, and the boys retreated against the walls. First Matt, then Chacha was seized. Their hands were bound behind their backs, and their mouths were sealed with tape.
"You're going to be locked down," Carlos roared at the remaining boys. "We'll decide what to do with you tomorrow, but understand, we won't, repeat, won't tolerate this kind of mob behavior."
"Don't you want to know what Jorge did?" said Flaco.
"What you did was far worse," shouted Carlos.
"He was going to kill Fidelito."
That did seem to startle Carlos. He stopped and looked at the little boy hiding behind Flaco.
"He's lying,"
said Jorge, who was holding his injured shoulder with one hand.
"There are 200 of us," said Flaco. "We all witnessed it."
And in that statement, Matt realized, was an implied threat. There were 200 boys in the dormitory. No matter how well armed the keepers were, they couldn't hope to control a crowd that size. The thought seemed to have occurred to Carlos as well. He backed toward the door and signaled the other men to follow. But like a swirl of dust on the dry salt flats outside, a stream of boys moved to cut off the exit. Now the keepers were surrounded on all sides.
"I think you should listen to us," said Flaco.
"We could talk about it tomorrow," Carlos said.
"No," thought Matt. "Don't let them put it off. The minute the men are outside the room, they'll bolt the door. They'll never listen to the facts." He could say nothing because his mouth was covered with tape.
"I think now is better," said Flaco.
Carlos swallowed. He fingered the stun gun.
"They've been corrupted by the aristocrat," said Jorge. "Things have gone wrong ever since that arrogant swine arrived. He is the one who led the attack, and the rest followed. He's the leader. The rest are his filth-eating lackeys." "Don't make things worse," Carlos said. "Luna in the infirmary has an interesting tale," Jorge went on. "When the aristocrat was brought in, Luna helped load him into bed. He saw writing on the boy's right foot."
"Oh no, oh no," thought Matt.
"There was an old scar across it, but he managed to make out the writing. Property of the Alacrán estate."
"Alacrán," said Carlos. "That's the name of the old vampire who runs Dreamland."
"I know," Jorge said pleasantly. "I wondered how a person could belong to an estate. Unless he worked there. Or unless he was an escaped crot."
A gasp ran through the room.
"Don't use that filthy word," Carlos said. "I'm sorry," Jorge smiled. "I was only using language I thought the boys would understand. I was still thinking about what to do with the information when tonight's problem cropped up." "It is funny, you have to admit, that all these lackeys have sworn their loyalty to a stinking crot, excuse me, zombie, instead of a real aristocrat."
"No, no, no," thought Matt. His weakness had been found out. Even though the keeper had drawn the wrong conclusion about the tattoo, it was just as devastating.
"I don't believe it," said Flaco.
"Why don't we look?" invited Jorge.
Flaco came forward and knelt on the floor next to where Matt was standing. He looked up, apologizing with his eyes. Matt didn't resist. It wouldn't have done any good. He allowed the boy to turn his foot toward the light and waited for the inevitable reaction.
"Jorge is right. It does say property of the Alacrán estate," said Flaco.
The rebellion went out of the boys then. They were so used to obeying, Matt realized, that very little was needed to make them surrender. They moved away from the door and slowly drifted toward the bunks.
"Wait," said a voice Matt never expected to hear. Anyone can get trapped in Dreamland. It doesn't make him a bad person." "Be quiet, Tonton," said Jorge. "Thinking isn't your strong point."
I have been thinking," said the big boy. "Our parents ran away to, Dreamland, and they were turned into zombies."
It was clearly difficult for him to say this.
"My father wasn't,"
protested Flaco.
He's living it up in the United States. He's running a movie studio, and when he gets enough money, he'll send for me.
We tell ourselves stuff like that,
stammered Tonton.
But it isn't true. All our parents are crots.